You're listening to Stateside. I'm April Baer. We just about lost our minds around here when we heard the news that Jen White, former All Things Considered host for Michigan Radio and, more recently, host of a daily show at Chicago Public Radio, is now the host of 1A, NPR's nationally syndicated daily news program out of WAMU in Washington, D.C. What a time to be doing this work. Global pandemic, economic collapse, logistically challenged national elections. It's just another day at the office for Jen. Now that she's had a few weeks to catch her breath, we are so excited to talk to her. Jen White, welcome back to Stateside.
Hello, April. It's so good to talk to you.
How in the world are you doing?
Oh, wow. That's, you know, it's funny. I ask people that question a lot, and then someone asks me, and I'm like, I don't really know. It's complicated. You know, I'll say that it's complicated. I am healthy, so I count that as a blessing. So my family's healthy. We're all doing well. But we moved to a new city during a pandemic. I'm trying to get to know my new coworkers over Zoom and Slack and all the other tools people are using as folks work from home right now. So it's complicated, but I feel like if the most I have to complain about right now is adjusting to a new job and adjusting to a new city, I really don't have much to complain about.
Yeah. Last week's news roundup is probably indicative of the range of subjects that you're dealing with on a daily basis these days. Discussion of Joe Biden's pick of Kamala Harris as vice presidential nominee, the USPS under fire, Russian claims of a COVID vaccine, and some world affairs, too, with the United Arab Emirates coming to the table with Israel. Has your process for how you're going about your daily work changed?
In a way. So one of the things that shifted is just the structure of my day. My show in Chicago was from 11 to 1. So my day just starts a little earlier now, too. And because 1A is a show where we're often covering one topic over the course of an hour, trying to get into the fine details of an issue is really important. So, yeah, I'm spending a lot of time reading and just trying to understand all of the nuance. Because, as you know, once you open the microphone, you don't really know where the conversation is going to go, even though you may be as well prepared as you can be. So you have to be able to make the zigs and zags as they come at you.
Yeah. And one of the challenges in daily news at any level is that pace. Mm-hmm. And the show's trying to keep up with what's going on. And it can happen that interviews lose their conversationality, I guess, and become more of a recitation. What's your method for pushing back against that and bringing your subjects back into the moment with you?
The key thing I use is listening. I really make it a point to listen intently to the conversation that is happening, not the conversation we had planned. Because if you aren't listening to the conversation that's happening in front of you, you miss out on those opportunities to hook into a moment of discovery or surprise or delight or just something unexpected. And I think if I'm only just reading the questions we had planned for that conversation, you miss out on all of that. And I also don't think it's really of service to the listener because they're listening too. And I really see myself as an advocate for people who are listening to the show. And so if something a guest says sparks an additional question in their mind, then I want to ask that question.
You're dealing with so many issues that have about a million different dimensions to them. The pandemic and the economic situation, the Black Lives Matter movement. I mean, these are not like one conversation subjects. How do you go about trying to figure out what it is that you have to bring to each of these subjects? You know, as obviously there's a lot of discussion about, you know, before an interview gets booked, but is there something that you use in the moment to try to intuit what listeners need to know about these incredible, you know, maybe once in a 100-year type issues?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I think a lot of it comes out of the production process. So, you know, we do editorial meetings every single day on this show. And in those meetings, we, as a pretty diverse group of producers, you know, and our executive producer and me as the host, trying to talk through the different iterations of a conversation and trying to make it broad enough that people who are listening are engaged and feel like there's something they can hook into, but also trying to keep those conversations focused so it doesn't get overwhelming. Because you can try to do too much. I mean, that's, you can really try to do too much. It's like, mm-hmm. we've got an hour to fill. We're going to talk about all the things. Well, you can't give all the things justice, even in an hour. And so it's at once trying to suss out the nuance in a conversation, but then trying to hone in on the parts that are the most important, that are the most essential in that moment, and then always remembering that you have another show the next day and the next week and the next month. So just because you have a conversation that day doesn't mean that's where the conversation ends. You can return to this subject another time and say, hey, we had this conversation a week ago about this thing, but here are some questions that still need to be answered, so we're going to talk about that today.
Right. For those who don't know you as well, will you talk a little bit about how you first became attracted to journalism and how you found yourself in broadcasting?
Hey, so I fell in love with radio as a medium when I was a little kid. My dad had these tapes of old radio dramas, The Lone Ranger and things like that. And I would sit in our living room and listen to those tapes when I was a kid and fell in love with the human voice and the power of storytelling. In 99, that's when I got my first job at Michigan Radio. And I actually came in as a fundraiser. I saw this job posting for a major gifts officer at Michigan Radio. And I so wanted to work in public radio. My sister had introduced me to it when I was 16 through Car Talk. She was like, there's this show you got to hear. These crazy guys. So that's where my public radio listening started. And so when I saw the post, I was like, oh, they are probably not going to hire me, but I'm going to try anyway. And they did. And so over the course of my, gosh, was it 16 years, I think I was at Michigan Radio, I did so many things, major gifts. I ran the television station, the public television station for a while. But over the course of that time, I was learning. I was learning from my colleagues. I was learning, you know, how a radio documentary gets put together. I was learning interview skills. I was learning all of that as I went because I knew where my heart was. And my heart was in front of the mic. That's where I wanted to be. And then Charity Nebbe, who was the All Things Considered host before me, when she decided to move back to Iowa, she really encouraged me to apply for that position. She said, you're ready for it. You should do it. And I was like, Charity, I don't know. And she said, just try. Try. You've been subbing for me. Like, you're trained. You know how to do the shift. You know how to do this. You're a good interviewer. Like, go for it. And I did. And I got the job. And I never looked back.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Jen White, formerly All Things Considered host on Michigan Radio. You hear her today hosting the daily national news program 1A from WAMU and NPR in Washington. I'm thinking back in my head now. You started in 1999. Mm-hmm. That was a time at which, you know, public radio was a very different kind of business than it is today. Mm-hmm. A lot of people who were in at that time had gotten into it as a form of alternative journalism, or at least as a, you know, sort of an adjunct to mainstream media. But everything is different now. The business is so much more tooled toward breaking news. And you as a host have handled so many more breaking news topics and a much more global perspective. How are you feeling about where public media is right now and just how the job has changed and how what listeners want of you has changed?
That's a really interesting question because now that I'm here in D.C., this is my third public radio station, and I think about the way things have been different and how they've stayed the same. Here's what I can say is the same. I think the people who listen to public radio still want to hear their communities reflected in the stories we tell. What I think is different is that it does feel like we're in a bit more of a pressure cooker nowadays. And because there is this avalanche of information through social media, there's at once a desire to be in front of the news, but we also have to be really careful that being in front of the news doesn't mean we're doing that at the expense of getting the story right. But it feels like that pressure has increased over time.
The other thing that strikes me about the arc of your work life is here you are on the job in your prime at a time when so many news organizations are having a reckoning over the experiences of people of color and women and LGBTQ folks and other marginalized communities. I mean, on the surface, these are workplace issues for journalists. You know, how do people feel in traditionally white journalism spaces and public media spaces? But these discussions have huge implications for whose stories get told and just how listeners come to understand stories about race and gender. We should say these conversations have definitely happened at Michigan Radio. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you came to WAMU at a time of huge upheaval that led to the exit of the general manager. When you think about this moment in journalism and the voices that are coming to the center, do you think that meaningful change is happening in front of us right now?
I don't think we know yet. I mean, so like I said, I've been in public media now for 20 plus years, and none of these conversations are new. None of these conversations are new. I had these conversations at Michigan Radio. We had these conversations at WBEZ. We're having them here at WAMU. And as my mom would say, the proof is in the pudding. We won't know whether or not a shift has taken place until we're on the other side of it. My hope is that this will be a moment when we all, our entire profession, feels galvanized to pay close attention to who we're bringing into our organizations, why we're bringing them in. Is it just because we want them to tell stories about race and gender and LGBTQI issues, or it's because we value their voices and the perspectives they bring? And then how do we create an environment where they stay? Because one of the really troubling things I've seen over the course of my career are the number of young journalists from marginalized groups who have come into this industry and then left because they didn't feel welcome, because they didn't feel like they had a place, because they didn't feel valued. So it's not just about bringing people into the door. It's about keeping them in the house. And that is not something we're going to know if we're doing it well for some time. I would be interested to have this conversation in 10 years.
What were some of the things that kept you sticking with it?
The fact that I did have people around me who, both within my organizations and outside of my organizations, people who affirmed me, who constantly assured me that I had a voice and I had the right, and in some cases, the responsibility to use my voice. It's not to say that there haven't been times when it was incredibly discouraging or when I've had conversations and I've walked away from those conversations feeling sad or disappointed. Have I experienced microaggressions in the workplace? Absolutely. All of those things have happened. But I always think about my parents and the things they overcame, the sacrifices they were willing to make for us. And so when young journalists came into the organizations I worked in, I wanted somebody to be there who they could connect with. I wanted somebody to be there to advocate for them and to help them learn how to advocate for themselves. I wanted someone to be there who they could look at and say, I see a possibility for what I want to do with my career. And the only way I could do that was if I was still in the room, if I was still in the building.
Right. The fact that you did stay put you in a position to do some really, really amazing work. You don't have to live in Chicago to have heard Jen White's voice on podcasts like Making Oprah, Making Obama, or 16 Shots. I mean, these were stories that were right at the podcast stories that were right in the center of America's consciousness again and again. What would you say your time in Chicago and dipping into the podcast field a little bit more, what would you say that those experiences did for you as a host?
Oh, wow. I mean, so the first thing they did was just help me to think about audio in a different way. I was so accustomed to doing, you know, the live two-way or the, you know, the interview that ends after 12 minutes. And to have that time to really immerse myself in the making of something that was so sound rich and creative, and kudos to Colin McNulty, the producer, on the making series, it helped me fall back in love with radio. It helped me fall back in love with audio, and sort of, I guess, reaffirmed that early love I found as a child. But then I also know it helped me think more creatively about what we can do in a talk show format. There's so much room for creativity. There's so much room for introducing content to our audiences in new ways, and having them even think differently about the power of this medium.
When we think about what you bring to the microphone, a lot of people talk in the Midwest about how the coastal regions don't understand or don't pay attention to the so-called flyover areas, and they sometimes miss the big stories until they get beaten over the head with them. How would you say your experiences in Michigan and Illinois, how have they helped to inform the journalist that you are today working in D.C.?
You know, I'll point to a story that was still evolving as I was leaving Michigan, and that's the Flint water crisis. Here you have a community that has been so deeply damaged by a failure of government, essentially. That's what it was. In a city that a lot of people weren't even talking about before the water crisis, but that was dealing with disinvestment, that was dealing with issues of race, and had we been having some of the conversations about what was happening in Flint before the water crisis, would we have had a water crisis? If there had been more conversations about why Flint needed investment and how to make that happen and holding public officials accountable to get that done, would the water crisis have happened? People's lives were changed. People's health were damaged. Children were harmed. And we can't pretend as if what happened in Flint isn't playing out in other places across the Midwest. And I think because so much of the news has been focused on either coast, yeah, they may have been happening in local media. I think local media does pay attention to those things largely, but they weren't happening on the scale that they should have happened. And I hope that 1A is a place where we can bring more of those stories to national attention, because it truly is a national conversation we need to be having.
Jen White is the host of 1A out of WAMU in Washington, distributed nationally on NPR for stations like Michigan Radio. Jen, we couldn't be happier for you. And thank you so much for taking a couple minutes to fill us in on how things have been going for you.
My pleasure, April.